There we go.
We have this very interesting item, which apparently tells us we have an hour. If we feel that we should go on, we will merely break it at the end. My name is Mike Nicol. I'm going to stand in front of them because I wouldn't want to spoil the look of the panel. I would just like to start by saying I come from Glencairn on the south part of the peninsula, and all I can say is, may fuck my release bar as varan. I won't translate that for so it's very rude. It's only understood in Stellenbosch, fortunately. We have an extraordinary panel this afternoon, and I'm going to play the host, and we will start with the guest who's flown all the way from the north of the globe, Ursa Sigurða Tóttir. And I'm just amazed that you're here. You're an engineer. You seem to me, from what I can gather from that wonderful search engine Google, that you run your own company. You started off writing children's fiction. Then in about 2005, I think it was, you went into crime novels. And it seems to me that you've produced a crime novel every single year since then. And now you're out here. As an engineer, are you not worried that something is going to go wrong in Iceland while you're here? I mean, is a bridge going to fall down? Because we have bridges falling down all the time. How do you manage this pace?
I'm only a senior partner in that firm, so I'm not running it. And it's in capable hands. And we don't do any bridges. We do power, geothermal and hydro.
I see.
So we worry about dams cracking and yeah.
And how do you manage to get out a book a year? I mean, how do you do that and a job and a life?
By working very little in my job.
Ah, we've all done the wrong thing then.
Yeah. No, I only work about probably 25% now. Yeah. I thought I worked 50%, but I did mention that in an interview in Iceland. And when I came to work, they said, oh, so who else are you working for? You're not working here 50%, so it's about 25.
That's really good to know. Now, Karen Brainard, who works more in the fashion than I can understand. She has produced 3 crime novels. She's a journalist by profession, and I understand that profession as well. It means that we lie a lot. Not saying that Karen lies a lot, but we do. Now, Karen, you've managed these 3 books at decent intervals. Are there a struggle to write these things? You can say yes.
Thank you, Mike. It's always a very difficult question to answer because I always think I would like to lie a little bit and saying, oh, it's easy peasy to write, you know. It's supposed to be your trade. You're supposed to be very comfortable in doing it. It's supposed to be easy. It's supposed to come from the top of your head and you get the divine inspiration and you sit down and you compose and so on. And unfortunately not. And you would think that I've had 35 years in journalism is long enough to practice, but I'm afraid it would take me another 35 years in journalism and I still wouldn't be able to write easily. I write very slowly. And I write... it's Hemingway who said it's easy to write. You just sit down at the typewriter and bleed. And that's the way I do it. So it's a slow process. Part of the slow process in my case is also I do a lot of research and I work very slowly around getting to my story and getting to my storyline. And with my last book, it was especially slow in the sense that I first wrote about 80,000 words and I chucked it all away and started all over again. So that didn't go very well. So I'm planning on not to do it again.
Going slow, I understand, because it means you can have a blood transfusion in between. Now, I'm going to get to somebody else who's on our side of the fence. In this, Bettina, you've written four books, but the last three have been crime novels, and they've come out at decent, regular intervals, as if you have a life and a job.
I do have a life and a job, yes.
Good. You're an attorney by profession, right?
Yeah.
And you live other side of the mountain. And is the writing a difficult process?
I don't know who it was who said it, but some other writer who obviously knows what he's talking about said, I don't enjoy writing, I enjoy having written. So that's that whole thing of doing the writing is horrendous, but then afterwards when it's done, it's like having a baby. It's wonderful, you can enjoy the kid, but getting to that point, that's difficult. But like Karen, I also do a lot of research, so and I enjoy the research. I don't know about you, but I enjoy doing all the background reading and the research and speaking to people, so that's fun. That part of it is fun. But sitting down in front of an empty screen and getting words out, that takes a lot of concentration and a lot of time.
Okay. Irma, you have broken onto the scene in this extraordinary fashion. It seemed to me a book every year since 2012, am I right? 2012 or 2011?
2012, almost.
2012.
And I missed
yes,
one
there was
year.
One you yes. missed. God, you were yes. slacking that year.
I know.
Now, why do you only write one a year? Why are you so slack at this?
I'm just going to tell my boss, because I work full-time, that I'm at the work 100% of the time, just in case he's listening. I'm not lying. So I work full-time, so I have to find the time that I can to write. And that's early mornings, late afternoons, or actually very early mornings and late afternoons. Probably if you were in Stellenbosch, you'd see me at some coffee shop now trying to fill the hours in between by writing. I love writing in coffee shops, so that's basically what I do. I just sit down and write, and I think other than you guys, I really like writing the first draft. I love writing that first draft. Then after that, it just kills me to go over that draft again and again and again and to polish it. So I know the other writers probably, I think, maybe only do two or three drafts, I think, in the way that I write, because I have a full-time job. I can't always go back to what I've written. So then I have to go over a draft 12, 13 times before I can send it in to the publisher.
Good to hear. I'm pleased that you do so much hard work. What I'd like now to briefly discuss the title of this group. I noticed that Voortfeest does not have a panel of male crime writers under the caption Crime in Old Spice. Do you feel that this is overtly sexist, that you are just up here alone? Do you think they've done something deliberate? Are you being marginalized as writers?
And have you noticed we're not wearing heels?
Well, Bettina, you can start. Tell me, honestly, have you been discriminated against because of this title?
I'm not even on the carpet.
Well, there you are, you see. Always somebody to the side.
I think because the... Over the last couple of years, we've had this explosion of female crime writers, where before it used to be just men writing. So it is still kind of a novelty. It shouldn't still be, but it still is. And I think people are interested in seeing how women write crime differently. So is Elmarie here? No. I don't think it's sexist. I don't think that we're being discriminated against. I just think it's a gap in the market that they are trying to fill, maybe.
Okay.
I would like to differ from that, because
please,
I think we're being terribly discriminated.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
Yes, we should
What's
ask for
so
more money.
What's so extraordinary about women writing crime? We invented crime.
Okay.
The first crime was done by a woman in Eden.
You mean the one that involved the fruit and stuff?
And we didn't blame it on the snake either.
I'm surprised you should have done, actually. So on the international scene, are you subjected to female-only panels?
Sometimes, yeah, sometimes. But I don't feel it as discrimination, really, and I've never felt discriminated against as a crime author, really, no. Iceland is a little bit, well, it's the top country when it comes to gender issues, meaning the rights of females and so on. Global Gender Index, Equality Index, and it measures sort of the gap between what it's like being a man, and then, which is 100 points, and then what it's like being a woman. And we're the top country in the world, and we have 87 to the man's 100, which is a bit depressing. But, yeah, I mean, that's the best country in the world, so you can imagine the worst. But in every step of society, you kind of see that there's not a big difference between how men and women are treated, except in banking and finance, where you have all men in the top positions, and in the arts, which is very, very strange, because I thought being a civil engineer, having worked with men my whole life, that art was more forward-thinking and so on, but it's very nice and very geared towards what men are doing is better than what women are doing. And I've been lucky, but like on the top 10 lists of the main book season in Iceland, I'm always there, number one or number two, but the other woman on that list will probably be a woman that has written a cookbook. So it's, and it's women buying the books as much as men, more than men.
Yeah. Yeah. We're discriminated against in every way in this country. That's why I take offense at this. You see, I just feel I have to do that. Emma, what do you feel about it?
I always have a little bit of a gripe with men just in one area. I don't think they really read South African women writers. I think that male readers tend to shy away from female crime writers, especially, and they only tend to go for the guys. And I see that. I can stand in a bookshop, I can stand in exclusive books, and I can see if a woman is buying a book as a gift. I can see when they're buying. They have, for example, there was a woman with a son, and she asked, "Well, what crime would you like?" And he always goes for he goes for Mike Nicol, he goes for Dion Meyer.
I can understand.
He wouldn't even No. But then you can see a woman there, and she'd pick up a Dion Meyer and a Mike Nicol as well, but also a Karen Brainard and a Bettina. Women tend to read much, much wider, but men tend to focus on just buying the male writers, and I have a little bit of a problem with that. And also, I also think there's probably not a problem with us being all female here, because I think we also kind of reflect the attendance in terms of these the Writers' Festival. I think it's mostly women, largely women, coming to shows like these.
It is. I mean, you're quite right. It is mostly in the audience, and it's mostly the book buyers. I mean, that is the fact of the matter. The interesting thing for me was that reading your books and then thinking about the content and the way it was presented and all the rest of it, I thought to myself, there's no objective way in which I can tell the gender of the person that has written it. Would you agree? Do you feel the same way, that actually when you compare these books by male writers compared to female writers, there is no difference? Ocean?
I think it's probably difficult to tell, depending on the writer, of course. If there would be anything that would maybe you could identify more with a male writer, it would be more action scenes, and the female characters would probably be weaker than they would be written by a woman, I would think.
Okay, but Bettina writes particularly good action scenes.
And
in fact, I'm thinking of getting you to write some of mine, if you would.
Sorry, repeat
that? I'm thinking you should write some of mine.
Yeah, yours is very different to mine. But yeah, coming back to your point, I enjoy writing action scenes. It's very, you're right, it probably is very different to the way that most women write. But there are also lots of male writers who don't have lots of action scenes, or South African male writers maybe don't have. You don't have a lot of action scenes.
No, I can't do them. I know. You stay away from that sort of stuff. It's like exactly. Sex. I stay away from that too.
Yeah, I do too. but it's very interesting. And I agree with you. I don't think there's any real way in which you can differentiate between male and female writers in terms of what they write about. Except maybe that the victims in the male writers' novels might, or the crimes might be more graphic than in most female writers. I don't know. I think so.
We'll get to that point. Karen, you.
I think in terms of domestic noir or the sort of an emerging type of noir crime, girl on the train, that type of gone girl and so on. I think it's more easily a female territory. In the sense that it's the type of crime that I think female writers might understand a little bit more, because it's more emotional crime and it has more to do with the dark recesses of the mind and quite often the disorganized mind, the slightly off-kilter mind. The lead character that's not really trustworthy and so on. It's very far removed from the conventional crime. And I think it's an area, maybe, that female writers might be a little bit more at home at than conventional crime.
Interesting point.
It's like probing the mind of a young female teenager. I think male writers would find that very difficult, whereas for any of us, it would be much easier. You know, the kind of character that you might get in a Gone Girl, the really unreliable type of character, and really deep, dark, emotional crime.
Okay, point. Emma, you write books which you just fly, the pages just fly past. Lots of dialogue, there's lots of stuff happening, lots of people talking to one another. Do you agree with this thing that your books are different to male writers?
I don't think so. I think female writers can write about anything. I don't think action scenes is the sole ownership of male writers at all. I think we're able to write anything. We're able to write blood as well, and worse even, than male writers.
Well, at the end of your book being a case in point. It's an extraordinarily tense couple of pages.
I think we're capable of just about anything. So, but what is interesting for me is that I think male and female writers can actually write everything, but then you can see the different categories that are sort of kept for male and female writers. Because as soon as you get these initials, you get S.J. Watson, you get something like that, and then you should ask, is it a male or is it a female writer? And are they trying to hide their gender behind the story? So I think, who was that guy who was caught out now lying about his entire life?
Yes.
And he wrote a typically female book, and he used initials. All right. Was it woman watching a murder next door? That type of thing. Correct, eh? So why did he do that? Why didn't he just write the Adrian or whatever? So I think there's very much a sensitivity around the type of book men and women are supposed to write, even though I think they shouldn't be. But it just shows you again the buyer's market. The buyer's market, men buy certain books and they will not go wider than that. There's certain categories that they choose. Women are more willing to read certain books. But again, maybe then, women believe domestic noir should be written by a woman, and that's why these men hide their names when they write these books. So I don't know why we're so trapped in gender. It's not necessary.
The initials bring me to an interesting point. A.J. Williams. Now, you use initials there. Was that an attempt to de-genderize the character?
So for those who don't know, it's my detective.
Sorry, I beg your pardon. No? Let me do that for you. That's rude of me. This is Emma's detective character. Features in the books, in the entire series. I apologize, I haven't read all of the
books. She's in about three books.
Three books. So she's the major protagonist in the latest one, which is Sondag. Yeah. And this is a marketplace, so please, you should at least buy one book from all of them on the way out. There are marks against you in heaven if you don't do that. And this being Stellenbosch, you know, you've got to watch out. There's a mafia out there. Please, you've used the initials there.
It's basically for the same reason. Her real name is Avril Joan, and she's a color detective working in Pretoria. So I assume that she would work under her initials for people to not immediately associate her as being a female detective, but to just gain that trust when they know that, oh, Detective A.J. Williams is going to be on your case, not Detective Avril Joan Williams is going to be on your case, just to create, to make exactly that point that she's also hiding behind her initials for people to create that kind of trust that they would normally have in a man and not necessarily in a female.
Okay. Let's just move on to the characters for a moment because I found them all very interesting. So you did one series with Thora, the main character, but now in the new series you've got Freya and then she has a male sidekick. Is what seems to me a male sidekick. I mean, I know they take sort of fairly commonplace, they both get about as much attention throughout the book. Why did you go that route? Was there a deliberate tactic there? Does the male character give you a market? Is money at the bottom of this?
No. It's, no. It was, the books about the lawyer were more difficult to write because the main character was a lawyer. Because in an investigation, when a murder takes place, a lawyer really doesn't have much purpose until it comes to court. And it, sorry. But they're great. Lawyers are great.
My whole life summed up.
Yeah. No, it's only when it comes to court, and they were not court dramas. So I had the added complication of injecting the lawyer sort of into the investigation. But so I wanted to write about the new series to have a police angle. And the fact is, in Iceland, only 14% of the police force are women. So I just thought it would be more realistic to have a male policeman and then the female child psychologist who was helping the police and sort of rocking between the two.
So that was a fairly deliberate decision then, just based on the statistics, the real statistics?
Kind of, yes.
It doesn't open other...
And also,
we can get to their relationship in a while because it's quite a torrid one.
Yeah. So it's it was also just to have... I mean, life is made up of men and women. And you know, as a writer, you want to write all types of characters. And I just found it more interesting for me to write if they were a man and a woman and had this antagonistic relationship, like you mentioned. That makes it more fun, because I can put them through the ringer again and again and again.
That's for sure. Irma, before I get back to you, Karin, you've done something with this. Biesla has been your main protagonist for two books. He's back in Tasteland, homeland. But we now have, outranking him really, Colonel Mentor. Why did you decide to bring her in? Were you bored with Biesla?
No. I wasn't. I'm not planning to get rid of him and replace him and go all gender correct on him. And he'll be there for a while and do his job. I wanted to bring in a strong and a stroppy female character. I find it during my years as a journalist. I spent most of my years in political journalism, and before that. Before I went full-time into political journalism, I did a lot of army, police, and, you know, went through the ranks. So it was very much a male world that I found myself in. So I feel very comfortable and very at home in the male world. I think I understand it. And, of course, a male world is a very easy world. It's men are not so complicated, I think. And but it's interesting for me to bring a female into a story, because a female has, and especially a female in a police force. When I do my research, I talk to a lot of females in the police force, and they have a different approach, as a different sort of circumstances. And I just find it very, very interesting to work with women in crime work. And I didn't set out to say yes, I need a female to counterbalance a strong male, and I don't want to replace the male. I'm a little bit in love with this male. I'm not going to let him go very easily. And so, and I nearly killed off the Colonel Mentor as well, because she was really a very irritating character, and but I was persuaded otherwise.
I'm glad you said that, because I can only concur. She was extremely irritating. But I could see that the value of having somebody who was extremely irritating.
Yeah, but you know, and that's to connect with Irsa, is it's really very nice to add an extra dimension of tension in a crime novel, is to have a little bit of tension between the sexes as well.
Yeah. With your character, Nikki van Vee.
Davie.
Davie. Yeah. I'm probably, sorry, it's getting late in the afternoon. I haven't had a drink yet. She's now been for 3 books, right? And are you finding her an irritation?
No, I think Nikki is moving in interesting new directions. She's developing, she's growing in many respects. And I'm definitely not through with her, and I don't think she's through with me yet. Mm. So no, I'm not finding her irritating. Did you find her irritating?
No, I did not indeed. she has a male sidekick as well in Blackie Swart.
Yeah.
And why did you introduce him?
When I started the series, I wanted the black-white tension to be there. Nikki is coloured, or black, as I prefer, and Blackie, contrary to his name, is white. And in terms of what's happening in the country, with affirmative action, with all of that happening, I wanted to have this tension and play out the tension in text between a very really, in most respects, liberal white guy who now has to deal with a black woman who is used to be his apprentice and now she's his boss. And it was an interesting dynamic to play with.
Which I thought came across very well and in fact seemed to add encouragement, if that's what we're looking to in the future, that their relationship was very good.
Yeah, and I specifically did not want it to be the typical tension. There are tensions between them about a lot of things, but
those
not
seem to
about
be more professional.
Race.
Yes.
Yeah, a lot of it is professional. Some of it is personal life. But in the end, when it comes down to the crux, they support each other in all the important respects.
Irma, you've also then introduced, apart from the captain, you've got the journalist, and he is male. Did you need him to get you to other dimensions in the plot, to other areas of the plot? Is that why he's there? I know he comes from other books, but is his role to be the male in the book?
It's interesting listening to the answers here, because I'm trying to think of men writers and whether they have females in their books, whether they have all male casts and they actually get away with it. Because I don't think we can get away with maybe having all female casts. I'm curious. Can female writers actually get away with having an all female cast and still sell a lot of books? Or do we do it because we need that male reader? So it's an interesting question. Because I know I can think of a couple of books written by men with actually no female characters in them. And so
you can name and shame.
No, I'm not going to do that. I just don't buy. So I suppose, is that the same thing? I don't know. So anyway, I think, again, you need that. It's an extra line of tension, so that's nice to bring that in. It's an extra perspective. And in South Africa, I think we've been thoroughly trained by now to be inclusive, and I think that's correct. That's what we should do. I think our cast of characters, if you're a South African writer, should include men, it should include women, it should include gay characters, it should include, I mean, we have everything in South Africa. I have not been to a country where we are such diverse as ours. And I think if you truly want to write for the South African market, you have to be diverse. So I think you should include. So I think those men writers, which I should not name and shame, should include females.
When your readers talk to you, do they talk to you about AJ? Is that the character that they identify with?
Talk to me a lot about the female characters, especially Sarah, Rana, AJ Williams. So I've hopefully built a cast of strong female characters. Yeah. And you can see people react to the characters as well.
Yeah.
So it's not just about a plot. I mean, crime novels are about writing characters that people fall in love with and they want to meet every time they buy that specific book or a new book of your book. They want to meet that character again.
Indeed. So is it the female character that your readers go for? Is that where the hook is?
No, it's really more Hultar. That I get comments on. But I think they like them both. But yeah. He seems to evoke more questions in people who like.
But he's such a mess.
Sorry?
He's such a mess.
Yeah, that's because
she's kind of got her life together.
But in Iceland and Scandinavia, we like messy, messed up characters. and all of our like literature is about depressed and horrible characters. And if we think about even comic books, like we hate Mickey Mouse. No child in Iceland wants to read about Mickey Mouse because he's very perfect. But we love Donald Duck, who is a total, not really a nice character at all. So I think this is also maybe why the crime novel has fit very well into Scandinavian literature. It's because we have this obsession with both social injustice and then also these very, very flawed characters.
Mm. Mm. You've given quite a lot of tension between those two characters. I mean, he's trying to get his leg over her all the time and does on occasion, and it leads to terrible repercussions in his emotional makeup. There is a sense that you're playing with the two of them. Now, I know you've written more books than we've read in English, so you know how that relationship goes on, but do they actually get it together? Or do you not want to answer that as
no,
a plot
I'm
giveaway?
I'm writing now the sixth book of that series, and if they get together, that will be the last book. I am not going to write about them going to the grocery store to buy milk and heating coffee in the morning. Then I'll just move on to other things. Yeah.
Which actually sort of introduces another topic, but I just before we get to the topic about characters and all the rest of it, yesterday we had a panel discussion, and Jonathan Ahmed, are you here, Jonathan? You're there. He said to me, "You're not wearing black. All crime writers wear black." So I decided that in order to honor this, I would at least have a black shirt today. But I see that not only men apparently wear black, but we have female crime writers who also wear black. So the two of you who are not in black, would you like to go for a wardrobe change?
Do you want to talk about my shoes? That's even worse.
Yeah, I know, but that's your commie leanings. I know, it's fine. the characters. Now, you're all involved in series. And series means that you come back to the character with every book. Why did you set out on the series path to begin with, Karen?
Because it's the kind of books that I like. It's the kind of books that I like to read. And when I started writing, I like all newcomers and so on, I wasn't very sure of myself. And I stayed with what I knew best. I've been reading crime since I could read, and I have loved a certain style of traditional crime, and that is crime with a serial main character, and that's what I decided to do then. And I think I will stick to it for a while because I feel comfortable with it, and I like reading that, and I love the feeling of returning to a character that I trust, and set him in a new scene and with new circumstances and a new story and so on. But of course, it's a character that develops all the time. So that's from my side as a writer, that keeps it very interesting as well, because you've got somebody said it recently, you've got, I think you said it yesterday, two endings to a crime novel. The one is the ending of the action or the story, and the other one is the ending of the main character story, you know, where it takes you on. And I like that idea of one story going on.
Does that mean that Mentor will come back?
No. It's
so she was too irritating.
Yeah. No, I think I will stick to my main sleuth, and that is Bieslar and his two sidekicks. I've made them my main sort of bearers of my stories, and they will remain there.
Okay. Erna, how are you going to carry on?
I've created a cast of about four or five characters, and I pick one and then write the next book about them, basically. So that gives me a bit of an opportunity to play with more than one character. But I think the most important thing is sometimes I think you've got plot, you've got the way you write, and you've got characters. And I always think you can, as a writer, you can get away with two of the three. Just, you know, the other one can be bearable, but you can get away with two of the three. I think character is very important because people latch onto that character, and that's somebody they come back again to go to visit, to go on a date with, to pick up. Dion Meyer's book says Benny Grissel, nog a Benny Grissel dossier. So it says exactly you're going to meet this character again. But it's very difficult to create a character that people fall in love with. It's extremely challenging. So if you've got one, you better hang on to that one. You know what I mean? It's very difficult. It's a little bit like a marriage. You're not going to, you know, maybe twice, maybe three times, if you're damn lucky. You know what I mean? So it's extremely difficult to find the character, create a character that people love and that they go back to. It's not an easy job.
You're not going to get bored in any way.
If you keep the character interesting and you always create tension, you always create new circumstances, you always challenge the character, then they can develop through the series and people can develop along with that character. And they're interested in what's going to happen to this character, how it's going to turn out. So in my case, I've got a little bit of tension between my female and male lead in terms of the journalists and whether they're going to finally maybe settle down, maybe have children or not. And it's carried me through six of the books now. And we'll see how things are. Maybe, but there's nothing that says a character can't die in the end as well. Because at some degree, at some point, you end up with, you're faced with the decision, can you carry on with this character, or do they have to die for the sake of just being true to the story?
Good point. So I've read an interview where you are far more kind of bloodthirsty. And you've said when they've run their path, then you just dump them and go on to a new series. Is that the way you look at it? I mean, that they've got a life, and while you're interested in it, it's fine, but there might come a point when it's not fine.
Yeah. Really, that's the way it is.
But you're not there yet.
I'm not there yet, but while writing this sixth book, I will probably make that my last in the series. I've also written standalones, and they are incredibly refreshing to write because everyone in the book is disposable and you can kill everybody if you want, or you don't have to take care of anybody. So I will probably, after the six, whether I continue with it or not, I'm going to write another. I've written horror. I'm going to write another standalone horror novel. I'm very much looking forward to that. I think as an author, and that applies to every author, you have to be very enthusiastic about the book that you're writing each time. And I find if my enthusiasm starts to dwindle, is that a word, dwindle, then it's better just to move on.
And what is it that keeps coming, that you keep going back to these two characters? Is it because of a plot, or is it an idea, or is it because of the characters themselves?
No, I like them, and I like myself, like you, reading series, and so I like writing them as well. But like I said, I don't have the enthusiasm to continue forever with the same characters. I need to do something else. And there are two types of protagonists in crime novels, a very general grouping. But one is the character that changes and evolves through the books with like an overarching story, and then there's the character that remains the same in every single book. One is not better than the other, it's just different. And as an example of this character that never changes would be, the glaring examples would be Poirot, Jack Reacher, and Bleak Child. And this is great. And you can write endless books, I think, if you're working with that type of character. But if you're working with a character that you're evolving and changing, then there comes a point that you feel like, I can't do any more for this character. This is it. Mm-hmm. Sayonara. Yeah.
Would you ever work with a character that was the same each book? There's no memory, there's no residual memory, there's no residual life, nothing.
I don't think so, but I've never even considered it. No, I don't think that would suit my type of writing. No, I don't think so.
Yeah. It's the thing about Jack Reacher which I really hate the most, is that he's always the same.
Yeah, but he does it really well. I mean, he does it really... Lee Child does this very well.
Yeah, and that's the problem. Bettina? Bettina, how many more books is Nikki going to be in, do you think?
Well, Nikki was never meant to be in more than one, and we're on to three now, so I'm not going to hazard any guess.
Good idea. Mm-hmm.
But I am working on a next Nikki de Vere. I'm not willing to kill off my main character. I'm not quite as ruthless as you are in that respect. But I think that it would be unrealistic to expect a character not to change, not to evolve, not to move on to other things. That's what happens in real life. People move on, people do different things, and that, I think, is reflected in Nikki's character. She's definitely still going to be there for the next book, at least. We'll see what happens after that.
Would you go so far as to kill her, do you think?
No, never. I have killed characters off, but I'm saying never, but never say never. It's not in the plans for Nikki to die, no. She'll ride off into the sunset at some point.
Just to get back to another point, is the character more important to you than the plot? I'm just interested in this as a kind of thing for students, really, because I feel that characters carry more value than plots do.
I think it depends on what you're trying to do with the book. Each has its place. The story is very important. Story is more important than plot, if you understand what I'm saying. And characters drive stories more than plots do. So in that respect, I suppose character is important, but the plot is also important. Otherwise, what they're going to do? Sit around and drink tea and do nothing?
You put a lot of characterization in. It's obviously important to you.
Yeah.
Given that it's a crime novel and that one has to do that very quickly and succinctly because you don't have the 30 pages available to you as a literary novelist, do you find that a challenge?
It is a challenge, but a good one, because you need to do what, as you say, the other novelists would be able to do over a long period. You need to do quickly, and you need to do it in short paragraphs or sentences. So it is a challenge, but I find that if you know where you're going with a character before you start, then it's easier. And I know for different writers it's different, but I always start with the end in mind. I know how the book's going to end before I even start writing.
And God, that you makes, perverted.
Well, it makes it interesting because you can do all sorts of weird and wonderful things, but you know where it's going to end.
Wow. Karen? Would you go with that?
Yeah,
it's
no.
Shocking.
Yes, it is. I find it really shocking, and and I'm really jealous. When I start, I know more or less where it's going to. Obviously, it's going towards the end, but but
aren't we all?
Yeah. Just to come back to serial characters, the one problem with a character that's based in a real life situation and so on is that they age, obviously.
Mm.
And what to do about an aging lead character. Mm. And Ian Rankin had that problem, with Rebus. And what do you do when you have a lead character and you kill him off? You know, like what is the Sherlock Holmes?
Mm. And you have to bring him back in a shower.
You know, and then you have to bring him back again.
Yes.
It's really a problem.
Mm.
But I find for me, I will my main character Bieslaw is much younger than I am, so I will expire way before him. So in my case, it's really not a problem.
I mean, do you face this as well, do you think?
Between the first and the second books, I had a year pass. But then I read an interview with Lee Child, and he said he has a problem now because his character is getting way too old. And then I thought, oh, problem. So what I then did is the third book is only like a few weeks after, and then there's a few months maybe. So I think in real life, I'm working on the seventh book now. There's about 3 years that expired. So, and I just thought I'm going to solve this problem right from the start. So I'll listen to the great ones and I'll bow down and I'll solve this problem.
Ursa, plots or story or the characters. Now the interesting thing to me is that your US publisher has the series under Children's
House. Yeah,
right. Without having read the other books that you have written in the series, are they all about children? Is that the main
thing?
No, they
aren't.
There?
They aren't. So yeah. So it's
so what happens with
a very
that
unfortunate
subtitle?
Name. Yeah, it's because Preya is working in this establishment, yeah. But that name of that series, I don't know why they selected that name. It's not very descriptive of the series, really. So, but they've had strange things that they've wanted to do.
They have Donald Trump.
Yeah, but I can't beat that. But they wanted to publish me under just my first name, mm-hmm. which is fine. It's Iceland. We don't use last names anyway. But the way they introduced it to me was, so you can be Irsa, and you would be like Cher of the book world. You lost me there. So it's funny how different the UK market and the US market act different. And what different things are yeah. used to promote a book and so on.
Yeah.
And in other countries as well.
Yeah. Okay. One of the things I realized that in the age before clocks, it was actually very difficult to measure time in an hourglass. So I have at this point absolutely no idea how much time is left. 10 to 3. Okay. Thank you. One of the topics that I want to get into as well, sorry, if you have any questions, please just shout, because I'm being very rude and taking up all the time, but, you know, you're free to ask questions if I allow. One of the topics is violence. Now, all crime writers face this topic of violence and how to present it and all the rest of it. There was an article in The Guardian just recently about Netflix and the series that they're putting out and how there are lots of dead women in the series. And in fact, there was a quote from some essayist in the US saying, crime stories are ubiquitous in our culture, not only for their transgressive lure, but for their power to reinforce social order. In this case, that women are most comprehensible as victims in danger from a man. Ursa, you begin the legacy with a particularly brutal scene.
Yep.
Now, I found that difficult to read because I'm a very sensitive male.
Are you asking me if I found it difficult to write?
Yes.
No, not at all, no. Yeah, it's brutal, and murder is a brutal business, and you don't bake a cake without breaking some eggs, I think. And Iceland is one of the... It's a woman being killed, and it's not torture porn. You're not following every splatter of blood.
No,
or
but it was still quite...
It's more left, like, in your head, in a way. But the thing is, Iceland is one of the few countries in the world where more females are killed than males. And that's because we don't have any syndicated crime. We don't have gangs where a lot of young men are killed by other young men. So this is mostly domestic violence that we have, or domestic people know the murderer and so on. And so I think there are like 3 or 4 countries in the world where females are more often the murder victim than males. And that description is... I think it was my 10th book, my 10th crime novel, And I was just getting really tired of we don't have guns in Iceland, like not shotguns. And I was just getting really tired of stabbing and drowning and hanging and throwing people off cliffs, and I wanted to do something a little bit different. So
It amused me. It amused me in The Reckoning when the gun is brought to the fore. And there's this scene made about, you know, God, there's a gun in this apartment. And what, you know, this is absolutely horrible. And I thought, well, in South Africa, you know, we just haul out a gun at the merest opportunity. You go through a red traffic light and somebody's likely to shoot you. So, you know, guns are just there all the time. It was quite a moment for me realizing that guns are not, you know, like our knives and forks.
No, and even the police don't have guns. So
they don't have guns?
No, they don't have guns, no. We have a special elite force which has access to guns if they need, but they're not allowed to carry them around. So.
Our elite force also have access to guns, but mostly they've stolen them from somewhere else.
Yeah, and
or they're selling them.
Yeah.
Bettina, you start off with a particularly heart-beating scene.
What makes it different to what we've been talking about is that the victims are male, not female. And I deliberately did that because I wanted to just turn that whole idea of the victims are always female upside down. Of course, later on you start wondering whether they in fact are victims, but that's probably a discussion for another time.
Indeed. Indeed, that would release too much information for all the people who are going to buy your book. So we'll let them buy the book and read it for themselves, I think.
Thanks.
Okay. Karen, we start again, your book starts again, and also a man is killed.
Yeah. Yes.
A decision, that?
No, it's not a decision, no. I never do things like that. I'm very bad on planning. That's why I'm a writer and not a housewife. I tried housewiving, and it didn't work out because I couldn't plan properly, so I became a writer. And I really can't plan. I can't plot and plan and so on, so I sort of go along. I have a sort of my idea of where I want to get to and what I want to write about, and then I set off and I do that. If I had to plan and I wanted to move away from the obvious thing and reflect your society and so on, I think I would probably have to start the next book with killing somebody with a rubber catapult or a ketty or something like that. You know, something not a gun or a knife or so. What was your question again?
The murder in the beginning of your book.
Yes. No, it wasn't. It isn't planned, and it's got nothing to do with male, female, and trying to be gender sensitive. Or I know we're sitting here with Bettina as a social justice warrior, and the two of us often go to battle about it. I'm a little bit more conservative than she is. But I really don't plan around being politically correct and, you know, saying, oh, it has to be a man because in this female killing society that we live in, I have to correct the image about poor females getting killed off easily in crime novels. So, no.
I like the analysis between the comparison between a writer as a writer and a plotter and then as a housewife. Clearly, why I am bad is because I'm a far better housewife. Irma, just let's get into... You've got... the book starts well after the events have occurred. There's a procedural at play here. But in the end, things get really tense, and there's a huge amount of violence that goes on in the ending of your book. Were those scenes easy to write? Do you find violence easy to do?
I think I'm particularly bad at writing violence. It really upsets me. But what I also do is I never really actually write about the blood, if it makes sense. I really kind of skimp over it very quickly. And I think it's to do because I have enormous respect for our society and the violence we face every day. And I don't want to put it on a pedestal. I don't want to bow down to violence and the actual crime. I want to focus much more on solving it and coming down to an answer and getting justice for the victim. And that's much more important for me than describing it in detail, because I just really think you can just open the newspaper, and that's maybe where our societies differ. You can just open the newspaper and you'll read all of this. You'll read everything about blood you can possibly imagine, and I don't want to put it on the book. The emphasis of the book is to entertain, to solve the riddle, and to get to the end of it, and to rejoice along with the victims that it solved.
Do you think that in this country, the difference between our fiction and our lives is not that great? That people, when they're reading fiction, are always aware that at the back of this is a real story?
I think so, but I think we have a strong focus on delivering justice within our writing to solve that murder. Because if you think of our solving rate of crimes in South Africa, it's really low. So, but in our books, it always gets solved. In our books, we have good cops. We have competent cops. In our books, we can test DNA. And we don't wait months and months and months. And this is reality. In our books, we wear the little overalls when we go to crime scenes. So we don't stomp through it. And you know what I mean? So I think there's a vast difference between what we write sometimes. And it reflects the best of the police force, but not necessarily the general conditions of the police force.
We're not being utopian in this.
May I add something? For me, it's very important to always remember as a writer that crime writing, or reading crime, is an entertainment. I mean, you suspend a lot of belief when you pick up a crime novel. You're not really dealing with reality, and you don't have to reflect society, and you don't have to be sensitive about societal issues and so on. You write an entertainment. When I pick up a crime novel, I want to forget about the world and I lose myself in the crime and the riddle and the characters and the story and the suspense of it. And it doesn't matter really. Getting back to the violence. When I get feedback on my books, it's more often about the swearing and never about the violence.
I always thought you had a dirty tongue. You're in a country where there's very little crime, and yet the Scandi Noir, you know, has just taken over the world with all this crime and so on. Are you ever aware that there's this disparity between the fiction and the reality?
Oh, yeah, every day. I mean, I cannot, and it's like you say, maybe that's the difference, that there is no spectacular crime in Iceland. I can give you an example. We had the first case of blackmail, and it was very easy to prove because the blackmailers gave the guy they were blackmailing a receipt for the money. So this is Icelandic crime. And although we have had some murders that are pretty grisly. Most of it is solved when the police arrive on the scene because the murderer is standing over the dead body, knife in hand, having argued drunk at a party. So it's not, you can't really seek like ideas from the real criminals, because Icelandic criminals are just a stupid bunch. And thankfully, it's very nice for you if you live there. But there are times when, for example, The Reckoning is based on, no, it's not based on, it's inspired by an actual case of the system completely letting down a little girl. And I took that and I injected it with steroids and made it even worse. And I was so angry when I was writing it because it had, you know, like a real case behind it, even though it's not about that precise case, that book is... Yeah, a little bit violent, yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, there is that much time left. Any questions, please? Jonathan.
A couple, Mike, but
no, you can have one.
I'll spread this into two parts. The first one is for Irma. Six books with an S title now. Are you continuing in that vein?
Now there's a reader for you, eh? Looks at the title and the letters.
Hi, Jonathan. Yes, the seventh book, it's called 47.
Not 7 and 9.
No. Much better than Sierra DeLon. Come on. We have a bit of an argument about how we should write it, but I think the publisher will win. They always win. They're writing it out. So that will be cool. That. After that, I don't know. So we'll have to see what happens.
And then for Khan and Bettina as well, the obsession almost with one-word titles in Afrikaans pronunciation. Why do they work? Why do you like it?
With me, it is not something that I plan. Once again, it was just something. It's one word that grabs a lot of the contents of the story that I wanted to tell, and then it's one word that you can interpret in different ways. And my second novel was two words.
Sorry, if I could just... It's punchy. It's one word because it's punchy. And also, you write action. You write short. You don't want a long title and then there's this huge action happening and then the title doesn't gel with the content. Not quite, no.
Anybody else?
Oh yes, very much. Yes.
Is it a true reflection of the
industry? I think so. She did a lot of research, and there's a lot of papers from that case available at the National Archives. And she actually, Hannah Kent wrote this book about an execution that took place in Iceland, I think in 1700 something. And she actually learned Icelandic to be able to do this research. So that book is absolutely great, yeah.
All right, we have run out of sand, but please, sir, one more.
Any hints on what we can do to get the translators to translate your books faster? So that we don't sit in a position where we can read a few of them, but not all of them in English.
Yeah, I think it's the pace is the same as I write them, so it's one a year in English. And so even if I would like die tomorrow, you will still have some that because it's I think it's three years behind, I think. Yeah. Yes, unfortunately, yeah. But I mean, there are authors that manage to write. There's one, Jørnlier Holst, a colleague of mine from Norway, and he writes three or four books a year. Yeah. But some of them are for children. But people, and they're good. They're not, and it's not like Patterson. He's not paying somebody to write them for him. So, and that to me is amazing.
Thank you very much. Thank you to the panel. It was a pleasure being able to be your lion tamer. Thank you very much. And thank you to the audience, too. And to Brooke here.